Court.
So we're going to talk about Willapa Bay policy development here this morning. I do want to note that we do have a recently adopted Grays Harbor policy that the agency has not made a lot of progress in our Wainucci obligations under that. And I want to assure you that we'll be putting that at the top of our list once we complete this obligation on the development of this policy. So our purpose here this morning, we want to brief the commission on our developments in putting together a draft policy, give a chance for the public to provide some comments, see if there's any additional guidance from the commission on the policy, and seek your approval to release a draft policy for public comment. You might recall we were hoping to do that last time, but we've deferred due to some completion of analyses that we needed to do. And we actually do not need to develop an additional management option that I know of, but perhaps that might be something that you ask us to look at. Our outline for the day, policy development schedule, just kind of review where we've been with our public process. Highlight the top key policy issues. Review the guidance that you've given us to go forward with as we're developing the policy. Look at some of the key elements of the draft policy and some analyses of the alternatives that we've looked at. Our development schedule, we met with you folks in November and asked for some initial policy sideboards, which you provided us. And we briefed you on where we had our road we had been on developing the policy, where we had got to in December. Today we'll present to you another draft policy for consideration and seek guidance to put that out for public comment with any additional direction that you might have for us on the policy. Put that out for 3 weeks and then come back to you in February to review the draft policy comments and perhaps consider adoption of a policy. We've had a fairly extensive public process, and since we last met with you, we've added two more dates. We had a public workshop on December 29th, where we shared some of the analyses that we had been completing with the AHA model. You might recall Andy Appleby gave quite a presentation on the model. Our efforts at that time were focused almost exclusively on Chinook, and we've been able to do some coho now. And the folks will be seeing the coho for the first time today. And then January 6th, which was that earlier this week? We met with our ad hoc meeting, or our ad hoc committee, to have some good discussion on where we were in the policy development. A reminder of the basin. My mouse work here. This is the Willapa Bay Basin and the major tributaries. Just to get you oriented again, this is North Creek and Smith, or sorry, North River and Smith Creek, Willapa River with Forks Creek Hatchery, about 25 miles upstream. The Palix River is right here. Nema, this is the North Fork Nema with the Nema Hatchery, the Nacelle River and the Nacelle Hatchery up here, and finally down in the very bottom is Bear River, just to get you oriented again. We've discussed many times why we need a policy, but to refresh your memory, enhance our conservation focus, restore and maintain our public trust, and clarify sharing of impacts between the sectors. Commercial and recreational. The guidance that you have provided us already: implement hatchery and fishery reform policy. Quite adamant in that guidance. provide some similar language as the Grays Harbor policy in terms of transparency, communication, monitoring, enforcement, and in-season management. Think long-term, recognize there may be short-term disruptions, pain, and friction. We're certainly experiencing some of that. Fishery and hatchery management, you asked us to evaluate prioritizing Chinook for recreational anglers, Coho and Chum for commercial fishers. You asked us to evaluate prioritizing the North Bay areas, Area 2T, for recreational anglers, and the South Bay for commercial fishers. And you asked us to evaluate switching the primary Chinook population from Nacelle to Willapa. You also asked us to consider how we would enhance chum production through the use of remote site incubators, on-station production, and water reuse systems. The draft policy that you have in front of you has a number of key elements that deal with public trust. The general policy statement, improve communication, information sharing, and transparency. Guiding principles, document and distribute the information that we have, ensure transparency, that folks can see the information that we have and supports the decisions we make. To utilize in-season management to ensure we meet our conservation standards. And that if we utilize marked selective fisheries, that we are able to monitor and enforce them and ensure we have compliance with our regulations. Adaptive management, we have provided for conduct and distribute an annual fishery review each year. General policy statement on conservation. We would achieve the conservation and restoration of wild salmon and steelhead in Willapa Bay and avoid designation of ESA, avoid an ESA designation of any salmon species. A number of guiding principles with respect to principles with respect to conservation. That the number one, we would manage our fisheries consistent with conservation. We would improve our broodstock management of our hatchery fish, ensure that we're meeting our guidelines there in terms of getting hatchery fish off the spawning grounds and integrating wild fish into our programs. Account for catch and incidental mortality, ensure that we have good release mortality rates and that we're monitoring and sampling our fisheries. The portion about in-season management, manage so that we are ensuring that our conservation objectives are achieved through management. Increase the technical rigor of our management. These can be pretty complex tools that we use, and we want to make sure that they're of the highest technical rigor possible, that they give us good, precise estimates. Moving on to some of the analyses of conservation, I wanted to just briefly touch on where we need to get to restore the Chinook stocks in the bay. We'll start with the current primary stock, which is Nacelle River. And you're going to see three graphs like this. I'll try to make sure they're pretty clear. There's obviously three different colored bars. The blue bars represent what the spawner level in the Nacelle River would be after 10 to 15 years. That's an average for those 6 years. The average spawner level after 16 to 21 years is the red bar, and 22 to 27 years is the green bars. And the purple line across the top right here, this is our objective, our spawning goal, essentially. And from this analysis, you can see that if we harvest Nacelle River natural origin fish at a 30% rate, we would not achieve the objective that we desire even after 27 years. In order to achieve the objective at 16 to 21 years, we would have to be somewhere around a 15% rate, actually slightly less than that. And there's no guarantee that in the next 6 years that we would make sure we're there. At a 10% harvest rate, our analysis suggests that we would average exceeding the spawning goal in 16 to 21 years and 22 to 27. And again, at 5%, we might make it in 10 years. It looks like it'd be real close.
Commissioner Kehoe has a question.
Thanks, Steve. And you probably went over this in a prior presentation, but remind me and maybe the other commissioners the spawning escapement goal. How was that arrived at?
The current goals are primarily derived by a habitat-based method, measuring the amount of habitat available that supports the species that you're looking at, whether it's Chinook, Chum, or Coho, and then utilizing some values from the literature and other basins as to how many fish should be spawning within that known habitat. They use a fish per square meter or fish per square yard of habitat, and they can estimate how many fish would be able to utilize that habitat under ideal conditions.
Okay. And when was that developed?
Oh, gosh, you've got me there. I would think about 30 years or more ago. It's been a while. So,
I don't know. Has there been some thought? I mean, 30 years ago is a long time, and imagine there's been some changes. Has there been any thought or discussion about looking at that goal again?
Yes, and in fact, the PFMC has asked us to review the Coho goal and develop a biologically based goal for Coho, essentially a spawner recruit curve and a maximum sustainable yield function. That analysis was completed over the summer and has worked its way through the PFMC process for Coho already. One of the elements of the draft policy in front of you are some suggested dates by which the department would review all of the species, salmon species within the bay, and determine whether new goals were appropriate. So I think I left my copy to the back. I don't know which part of the document there is, but within the draft policy, we do have those dates listed when we would have those reviews completed by.
And Steve, would that take into account all the habitat restoration work?
If they're biologically based, it would. It's because you're not going to base it on the habitat. You're not worried about whether it's gone up or down. The fish are going to tell you what their productivity is within the system. The spawner recruit analysis is independent of the habitat.
I guess I don't understand that, but that's a subject for a later day.
Yes.
I mean, it's a good subject. A lot of people ask that question. We're investing hundreds of millions of dollars in habitat restoration. So are we expecting more fish as a result? And if so, how is that expectation reflected in fisheries management? But another day.
Yes. Moving on to the other stock that we were asked to consider for primary, this is Willapa River, and again we're looking at Chinook. The same analysis indicating that, I'm going to start here at the 15% rate, excuse me, at the 15% rate, we would average exceeding the spawner goal for the 16 to 21 year period and the 22 to 27. At the 10% rate, we would just almost get there for 10 to 15 years, what we might call the 10 to 15 might be the aggressive versus a rapid approach. And then if we harvested at 5%, we would meet it clearly in 10 years. So are these understandable for everybody? Are they tracking those? And then the final ones, there's been some interest in where North River might end up if we selected that as a primary. The analysis that we've conducted so far suggests that this is a pretty tough one to achieve under any of the conditions or any of the harvest rates that we've looked at so far. Under the 15%, We might make it in 22 to 27 years. And under 10%, we should make it 16 to 21. But the achieving a very aggressive schedule on North River seems very difficult from the AHA modeling that we've done. By the way, these 10 to 15 years are what you might think about as a 3 brood cycle for Chinook, and 16 to 21, 4 brood cycles. So you're asking the fish to do a lot in 3 generations or 4 generations to adapt to and take advantage of these habitats. So the next policy element of management, our criteria that we set out for was to achieve our broodstock standards, primarily our PNI of 0.67 for the primary stock. And we were asked to try to reach the spawner goal in 10 to 15 years. And so we said our objective criteria was what percentage of the goal would we achieve in 10 to 15. I believe I might switch you up a little bit, but we'll see. I might look at 15 or 16 to 21, but I can't remember. And then for the recreational fishery, we were looking at a Chinook catch relative to a 25% increase, as well as a coho catch relative to 25%. The commercial fishery, we've looked at Chinook and coho so far. The total ex-vessel value would be about $900,000. For Chinook, that's about $370,000 of that, and about $520,000 for coho. So under alternative A that we've presented for you for Chinook management, we would achieve that spawner goal in 3 brood cycles. That is the 15 or 10 to 15 years it would average above the goal. We would shift the primary population to Willapaw. Beginning in 2018, we would limit our impacts to 9.2%. So this is an aggressive approach at getting to that 10 to 15 year goal that we've initially established. We would seek resources to increase Chinook hatchery production in the bay to 9.65 million. We would actually switch most of the production down to the south end at the Nacelle hatchery, where 6 million of that would be. This alternative prioritizes recreational opportunity in the outer upper bay, 2T and 2U, through September 15th, and provides, after fulfilling the needs of the recreational fishery, provides the commercial fisheries the remaining impacts. We've also suggested some ways to transition from our current management with 3 million fish released in Willapa River to pushing those down to the south end. We still have a tremendous number of fish coming back to the Forks Creek facility in the Willapa. So we've suggested a way to think about transitioning and helping remove some of those hatchery fish from the spawning grounds until the switch of the hatchery production is complete. Chinook management alternative B, this would take a little bit longer approach. This would be the 16 to 21 year, 4 brood cycles. Also moves Willapa to the primary population. But beginning in 2018, our impact limit would be 14%. So about a 5% difference in the impact rate. Again, we would try to increase the overall Chinook production in the south end, and the same priority for the recreational fishery in the outer bay. And again, a transitional plan for getting through the next 3 years of management. Alternative C, again, not quite as aggressive, but still fairly rapid in Chinook terms. Achieve the spawner goals in 4 brood cycles. That would be the 16 to 21 year time frame. It retains Nacelle as the primary population. We would limit our impacts immediately this year at 13.7%. It continues the priority of the recreational fishery in the Outer Bay, 2T and U, and provides the remaining impacts to the commercial fisheries. So comparing how these alternatives look, this is a 10 to 15 year rebuilding, a bit of the aggressive approach with Willapa as the primary under alternative A. And on the left, you can see the current production levels. This means our Chinook levels stay at 7 million for the Bay. We still flip from 3 million at Forks Creek. Those go down to Nacelle. And we have 500,000 at Forks Creek. Where's my mouse? So we can reach our spawning goal, and we can reach our PNI goal, and this is for Willapa River fish, right? But we have trouble getting either of the harvest objectives to the goal. And balancing those, how far each one gets, can be really problematic within the planning abilities of the model. If we do the increased production, an additional 2.7 million at Nacelle, we can reach the Willapa goal for spawners and broodstock management, and we push both the recreational and the commercial sectors much closer to the goal. So the same analysis for Willapa under alternative B, with the current production level taking a little bit longer. We don't really gain all that much by waiting on Willapa. We do gain a little bit over here under the increased production scenario, especially for the rec, and we can bump the commercials over the line. So those comparisons, everybody's got those. Yep. Nacelle under the aggressive three broods versus four broods approach. This one was very, very difficult to try to achieve any balance in striving towards the objectives. And that's why you don't actually see this alternative in the draft policy. We just can't push the commercial values for Chinook at that low level of harvest. And essentially the fish all pass through to the recreational fishery. Even under this rapid approach, it's still fairly unbalanced. We can meet our spawner goals or our broodstock goals, but we can't balance these two and push both equally towards the goal. For coho management, we would continue to achieve the aggregate spawner goal. We have been doing that fairly regularly through time. We would continue to try to manage our hatchery programs and fisheries to achieve our broodstock standards. We do have some work to do there. And prioritize this commercial opportunity on coho for the period September 16th through October 14th. And in fact, there's fairly aggressive schedules that were developed to model these fisheries for commercial fishing directed at coho, especially in the south end of the bay. So our coho with Willapa Chinook primary, so I know that's a little confusing, but this is the fishery schedule that we got the Chinook modeled at to achieve the spawner goal. So what would that mean in terms of coho catch under that fishing plan? And under our current Chinook production levels and the fishing plan associated with that, we actually do better than we do if we increase the Chinook production. It's because of where we fish within the bay. So under the current Chinook production, we do achieve the coho objectives for all four. And under the increased Chinook production, we don't quite push recreational and commercial to their goals. And we exceed our aggregate spawner goal in the bay each year. In terms of if we leave, go ahead.
Commissioner Kehoe.
I just, that seems a little, just go back, it seems a little counterintuitive. Maybe can you shed some light on that, Steve?
When you increase the Chinook production, you move the fisheries around to take advantage of them and try to maximize your Chinook, and it just results in a little bit less coho coming to the into the catch. It's counterintuitive. I know it is. I had to look at it three or four times last night to make sure that that's where it is. But understand, I mean, all of these fisheries can be adjusted in various ways, especially if the fishers ask us to do something different but stay within the guidelines or the impact levels. There may be a choice made to forego opportunity on a certain species in order to take advantage of others, right? This is just a look that we did to try to plan fisheries to achieve balancing both of these and pushing them towards the limit. Quite frankly, the fishers might have better ideas than we did on how to do that. So, in terms of the leaving nacelle as the Chinook primary, this is a much rosier picture than we saw for Chinook harvest. So we do make the coho goal. You can see that we are much closer to the goal under this scenario. We're gonna push those nacelle fish down a bit. Come on, where's my mouse? There we go. This has quite a significant boost of ex-vessel value for the commercial sector. You might recall under the Chinook scenario with nacelles primary, they were down about here. So when you put them together, they're actually approaching the goal. And unfortunately, we don't have any graphs showing the combined for you. But I believe that under all three of these scenarios that we're presenting, the combined is within 100,000 of our objective for each of the three scenarios. And then the recreational side would also exceed their goal. For chum management, our goal is to achieve the aggregate spawner goal for the basin. We're currently under a moratorium in the 2010 plan, and we would essentially continue that with no directed chum fishing or a 10% impact limit and a 10% impact living limit until that spawner goal is achieved. So we would continue to not fish until we had achieved it. This does prioritize commercial opportunity during the chum management period, which is the last half of October. And we would, again, continue to evaluate ways to enhance the chum hatchery production in the system. So key points, take-home messages from our analyses. We've said this, I think, a number of times to folks. These objectives are a significant challenge. It's really difficult to pull all of these off at the same time. And under our average ocean productivity, which is all of our results that we presented to you, are based on average ocean conditions, we know that we must bring down the Chinook harvest rates if we want to achieve our conservation objective and the spawning goals. We're thinking that Willapa has the best chance of success as the primary. The increased Chinook production is causing a bit of concern for folks, and each sector views that differently as to whether it benefits them or not. But our analysis suggests that it does indeed help both sectors, that it's not just for one or the other. Much like the commercial sector, though, there may be some disruption of normal fishing areas. Folks may have to learn to fish new areas. But it does appear that our objectives are within reach. Much feeling a lot better about where we are today than we were when we first started looking at Chinook. So our next steps, an opportunity for the public to provide some comment. I know that their time to view this has been very short, as has mine. ask if there is any additional direction that the commissioners wish us to pursue within that draft policy, and seek your approval to release the draft policy hopefully later this week, in the coming week. And Like I said, I'm not sure whether we need to develop an additional management option, but if there was something that we needed to evaluate, we could. And come back to you in February with a review of the public comments that we've received on the draft policy, and see if there's additional direction that you wish to undertake at that time. And I believe that that is all. Any questions?
Okay. Very nice job. It's complicated. Lots of moving parts to this. Lots of complexity in the interrelationships. Commissioners, do you have any questions for Steve? Commissioner Schmitten?
Steve, thank you again. And I appreciate beginning to see some daylight or see some fish that are needed to balance this out. And the workload has been intense. Have you also given some thought to looking a little further down the road as you develop the primary options? And those would include a comprehensive hatchery analysis. Are hatcheries up to speed? Can they do more for us? What would that cost, that type of look? And certainly one we've talked about, alternative gear for commercial marks like fisheries. Are there options for the commercial sector to take more fish without giving them a burden of gear that is ineffective? Looking at that are two of the things that have crossed my mind that shouldn't be too far out but should be on our need-to-do list.
You're correct, and they actually are on our need-to-do list. I just totally forgot to review those for you. I wrote them down. Under the adaptive management portion on page 10, both of those components are in our sort of longer-term, bigger vision part of our commitment with this policy. So item number four is an evaluation of additional mark selective commercial gear, and hope to have a report on that by the end of 2017. Obviously, there's a number of items or some work going on the Columbia with that already, so hopefully we could feed off of that. And then number five there is the comprehensive hatchery assessment. That would do, I think, exactly what you're asking for, is a real in-depth look at our hatcheries. And I can tell you that as we've asked our hatchery folks to consider some changes down there, especially 6 million Chinook at Nacelle, there's some squirming going on. Right. So the other parts of that are the annual fishery review. We talked a little bit about that in the presentation, improving our in-season management, reviewing the spawner goals that Commissioner Kehoe asked for. And then the last piece there is a comprehensive review of the ocean ranching item that we've been asked to evaluate also, and would hope to have a very thorough review of that by the end of 2016 for the commission's review.
Okay, on the ocean ranching item, I just wanted it to be clarified with the public because there's a lot of misunderstanding about what ocean ranching means, the differentiation between ocean ranching and salmon farming is a very, very important one. So can you help us? I could give it a stab, but I'd rather hear it from you if you're prepared.
Well, we have done a little bit of looking into ocean ranching, and obviously there are both private ocean ranching ventures as well as what might be considered a more of a public cooperative ocean ranching venture. Ocean ranching is simply large-scale hatchery production of fish that you release into the ocean, let them grow up out there and return. Many of the private...
Then they're collected as a terminal fishery.
Well, there's two scenarios, one of which is that the grower of the fish tries to collect them at a facility. You might recall Oraqua did a fairly large project like that in Newport, Oregon. The idea was not to have fisheries directed at the returning product, but they would collect them at the hatchery and then sell the product for profit. Most of those ventures have not proven successful in the long run. The other type of ocean ranching that I think the commission asked us to examine, Alaska and Japan, is providing those fish for harvest opportunities, to augment harvest. And they provide a large number of fish in a very small area that then become available to fishers with state management of the fishery to, like I said, just augment what's already there in the wild and existing. Obviously, a number of issues with that, and you have to deal with prior interceptions, but we were actually hoping you would clarify whether you were hoping more for the former of private collection or more of the latter for, you know, augmenting the harvest opportunities out there. And my assumption was the latter, but we did want to clarify that at some point with the commission.
Well, my preference would be the whole range of options.
Okay. And
the idea was planted in my mind by a oyster grower friend of mine who did conduct an ocean ranching operation in the 70s very successfully. He did not mind that there was interception of the fish that he had invested in raising. But most of the fish did return to his dock, and he was able to capture them and benefit. So one of the attractive aspects of this concept to me is that it's private enterprise that's supporting the production of fish. In this case, this friend would like to raise chum, and we have very low chum numbers now. So having a private person, private sector, responsible for the production of fish, paying the cost, to me sounds like a good thing, since our budget's under so much stress. So I'm interested in hearing any and all ideas on that score.
Okay.
Commissioner Mencken?
Yeah, I'm familiar with ocean ranching, and I think the model that I'm thinking of is the former that you spoke to, which is the private nonprofit model of Alaska, where the folks that grow and release the fish have first opportunity to harvest the fish when they come back. The way they pay for the program is that they put out an early fishery for the stocks when they come back, and they're harvested for and on behalf of the harvested and sold for and on behalf of the people who put the fish out.
A cost recovery type
yes.
situation.
Okay. Yes. I think that the other type of sea ranching is very problematic, which is the model that was attempted in Oregon. There are some social problems associated with that, and the interception of your stocks and fisheries moving in on your stocks. If you're the fisherman, that's one thing. If you're a for-profit venture, then that's another thing. In the case of Weyerhaeuser, there was just no benefit, and there was no control, no legislative control, no harvest control over the fish that were returning to the facility. And then the Alaska or the Japan situation is much more similar to the private nonprofit in Alaska, is where the fishermen actually operate their own hatchery system, and they derive benefits from it. But there is no significant intercepting commercial fishery or a large recreational fishery that would intercept your fish as they return back to your fishery.
Well, that's certainly part of the analysis that we're interested in, the feasibility, the economic feasibility, the biological, physical capacity of the bay, interactions with other species, I suppose. But we also understand that there are legal hurdles. if we were to assign a fish run to the person who invested in producing those fish, that would, as I understand it, require legislative change.
That is
so
correct.
This is just a feasibility study that we're asking for. And I want the public to understand that, too, because I'm fully aware that there's a lot of chatter out there that somehow this commission is barreling towards an elimination of traditional fishing techniques, replacement with ocean ranching or some other untested approach. And that is not, as you could see, that is not what is on the table right now. So it's, but we are, I'm personally, and I think others are interested, we've heard that it's going to take us some time, 15, 20, 25 years to get to where we would like to be, meeting all of our conservation objectives on a regular basis. So if we're contemplating a vision that is 20, 25 years from now, I thought to myself, well, that means 35, I'm going to be in a nursing home by then. So it's, I personally have been an advocate for making this policy truly comprehensive in its vision. Where would we like Willapa Bay salmon management to arrive at in that length of time? And to me, Willapa is this unique system. We've heard our stakeholders express their feelings about traditional fishing, about the resources of Willapa Bay, and the fact that this is the only place in which there is not a need for negotiation with the tribes. So this is going to be the place that is looked at as the model of how the state would manage its resources alone, on its own, independently. So, and being a resident of Pacific County who has worked on the resources of Willapa Bay since I moved there, my first job was with the Willapa Alliance, and one of our first projects was to develop a vision for long-term recovery of fish stocks in Willapa. I understand the unique qualities of Willapa Bay. It's really a remarkably intact, productive watershed. It's one of the most compact of the watersheds because it's ringed by hills. Therefore, what happens in Pacific County is all you need to be worried about in terms of watershed impacts to the bay, because it isn't there isn't this large drainage system that extends out beyond our county. So it is a unique system, uniquely productive system, no listed species, no co-management challenges. This is going to be our model of how we would do business as the state of Washington, as the trustees of the resource. So that's my little sermon. And that's why I'm so interested in this longer-term vision. Commissioner Mencken?
Just one more quick comment. There are three ways, and probably more, to increase your P&I and accelerate your recovery. One, of course, is marked selective fisheries. Another is reduction in hatchery production because of the interaction of wild and natural fish on the spawning grounds. And the third is the use of weirs to take out, to reduce the number of hatchery origin fish on the spawning grounds. Have you looked at the potential use of weirs? I understand that it would be a tightrope walk to try and get a weir that was functional in a place like Willapa. But, you know, with modern technology and some of the weirs that are being constructed throughout the Pacific Northwest, have you examined that potential?
Commissioner Mencken, we have not at this time. I think that would be part of our comprehensive hatchery review. What would we do to achieve those broodstock management goals? I think that's where we would hope to make that evaluation.
Okay. Other commissioners want to say anything? No questions? I personally think you're doing a terrific job, Steve. This is a hard one, and there's been a lot of unhappiness over the years in Region 6, and just one of the most difficult regions in the state. So this is a tough one. A lot of people are very invested in this, so thank you very much. I think you've done a good job. So now we can move to the hearing part. Do we have people who've signed up? Quite a few people have signed up, and I'm going to call you two at a time. I think most of you have testified before, and I'll just remind you, we have a three-minute rule, so when you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up, and we'd really like you to conclude your remarks. Okay, Bob Lake and Jack Hollingsworth, would you come forward, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair and fellow commissioners. And my name is Bob Lake. I am the president of the Yellowland Association. First of all, this is the first time we've seen this document. As far as the transparency goes, it don't work in Region 6 anymore. We don't get it, but the recs do. But the other thing is, well, I got a few comments here that are real questions. Our summer dip-in fisheries goes back to the Magnuson-Stevenson Act. This isn't even mentioned in here for a fishery for us that happens in August, early part of August. That's the first thing. And then also I'd like to know, how can you increase your recreational catch when you don't know what it's been over the last 20 years? People don't turn in punch cards or no creel census, no nothing. So how are you going to increase the number when you don't know what it is? And then also I would like to make another suggestion. I would like to see the data that was collected by Region 6 staff the last few years when we've been utilizing recovery boxes and that on the selected fisheries. I would like to see that data utilized in our mortalities, period. It hasn't been. And also, the mortality, okay. And then also, the amount of spawning rearing habitat was done from an overlay of Grays Harbor, which is entirely different than Willapa Bay. Willapa Bay is gravel-starved, period. Anybody who knows the bay knows that. And what's happened with the hatchery reform thing with Nacelle, it happened just like everybody told, everybody that knew what was going on, what was going to happen in Nacelle, and it did happen. You're not getting the natural recruitment spawners back. It is not working there. And it's not going to work in the Willapa system either, the way it's going. I don't know why you keep pressing that we have to have a number one Chinook priority river, because it's going to cripple the whole area, not just the commercials, but also the recreational people. And I really believe we need to have a large buffer zone around North River to protect those North River stocks, so nobody fishes in a broad area until September 1st, when those Chinook are finally cleared out of there, that are North River Chinook. And I think that it's really imperative to look at this. Also, one quick thing, Willapa Bay Pacific County is a number one commercial fishing county in the state of Washington as far as deliveries for commercial fish. They're also number four in the nation. You cut our gillnet fishery back anymore, it won't be that. And it's going to cripple the whole county. And this is just like Alan said in his first part of the testimony there, guys are crab fishing now because of the fishery that happened in Grays Harbor. And I think that with that, we need to look at things. We also need some more time to review this, and let's not rush into this so we don't end up in the quagmire we did in Grays Harbor. Let's go for at least two more meetings before you people have to make a decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Art Holman? Okay, Mr. Hollingsworth?
Good morning, commissioners. Like Bob said, this is a first look that at the draft that we've had, and just a quick scan through it, I see some mention of a tangle net early, well, after, well, between Labor Day and September 10th. That's been tried on the Willapaw. Willapaw is a horrible place to use tangle net. It's full of anchovies that time of year. A tangle net is exactly what it says. It tangles a fish, whether it's anchovies, herring, salmon, whatever. And I fished that type of net in prior years and quit because when you get into the anchovies, even on a straight 5-inch or 5.5-inch coho net, they tangle. They get in and spin. You can't just shake them out. You've got to pick them out. And it's a terrible job, and it takes a lot of time. So a tangle net really won't work in Willapaw. And also a quick glance, I see that we want to meet our aspirational goals. It's going to be tough for the commercial man because you're eliminating our season. The Chinook starts running in the first part of August. We don't even have a scheduled fishery till after August 15th with a tangle net. And that was an area, the South Bay. Nothing on the North Bay, where if Willapaw is designated as a primary river, those fish have to be removed. And with such a short commercial season, after our management policy goes into effect, after 2017, you release close to 9 million Chinook in the bay, I would expect probably 60 or 70% of those are going to come back as surplus because they can't be caught by anybody. The sports has a 3.2% impact rate. That's not going to catch many of those fish. 1% returns, that's 90,000 Chinook. I don't know how you're going to convince the legislature to have this type of hatchery production when they come back each year as surplus. Thank you.
Thank you. Alan Hollingsworth. Okay, Mr. Holman.
Okay, Art Holman. I fished the Willapaw since about 1970. I watched a steady decrease in the size of our kings. We have a really unique opportunity to start doing something for these rivers and bays to recover our fish. If we don't do it now, we'll never get it done. I have a great-grandson that likes to fish. Is he going to be fishing for 6 and 8 pound kings when he starts fishing? If we don't do something, that's what's going to happen. I'd also like to see the nets pull back down to you from the 101 bridge back down to South Bend Boat Launch to protect the south channel of the Willapaw. Also, I'd like to see the nets pull back in November to protect the steelhead because they start running in and they're just destroying them. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Tim Hamilton, please come forward. Mr. Hollingsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commission members. First of all, opening the coho after You have to open the coho fishery right after Labor Day because a pretty good percentage of the coho goes through the bay before the 16th of September. If no fishing before September 15th, you're going to have tens of thousands of surplus Chinook. One of the options was to have a harvest rate of 13.7%, and you're going to have approximately 95,000 Chinook come back. You're only taking maybe 20,000 out of the 95,000. Legislature isn't going to approve money for hatchery production at that rate without any harvest. Will the hatcheries especially if you go to the Nacelle, big production of Chinook, you're going to be able to raise both coho, hatchery coho and Chinook there. I don't think you have the capacity. If you go up close to 6 million Chinook out of Nacelle, you won't have the capacity to put any coho. If you're going to raise the Chinook at Nacelle for harvest, you have to have the coho there, because you can't put lots of coho out of the Willapaw River because you can't harvest them because of the Chinook impacts. Tangle nets won't work in Willapaw. They're more or less the way they're made, the material is a nighttime type net, and most of the coho catches is in the daytime. And also, there's lots of grass over there that you're going to have to monkey with. To open the South Bay for most of the commercial fishing, you're going to have to run, if you run from Tokeland, you're going to have to run 1 hour approximately each way. That'd be like driving from Aberdeen to Seattle to go to work every day and coming back home. Lots of extra wear and tear on your boat. You're going to have to purchase at least two nets, maybe three nets. That's going to be a minimum of $10,000. By the time that you pass whatever's going on, it's too late to order new nets. If you fish up in a 2U area and part of 2T, you use a net that's, a lot of them is only 25 foot deep. You're going over to fish in water from 50 to 75 feet, a lot of it. It won't work. I think one alternative to catching alternative fishery is to use set nets in shallow water way up on the banks. The Quinault tribe does it in the Chehalis River. They catch lots of coho, very, very, very few Chinook if they fish in the right areas. And it was mentioned about the fish farming. I think you should put net pins in the salt water in Willapaw Bay for the Chinook, so they'll come back and mill around in one area for a week or two or three before they go up the river, and give everybody a chance to catch them. Thank you.
Ross Barkhurst. Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Commission. For the record, my name is Tim Hamilton. I'm the president of the Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy and a member of the Ad Hoc Committee in Willapaw. We, too, haven't seen all of the final language that they've been working on here earlier, but we saw about 90% of it. But there's been some changes to it that I think are good, and one of them is to recognize that we have a 3-year or 4-year window with these hatchery fish coming back that are based off of hatchery production and harvest to the natural spawners. That's already biased. We have to live with it. So one of the things we have here we have to watch for is how do we manage this hatchery production for harvest without continuing to decline the natural spawners. And one of my concerns from the conservation standpoint is if we get really exuberant about killing every one of those hatchery fish, right now our natural decline is going like this, and that trend stays for the next 3 years, you could go in to get those hatchery fish and you're going to take and bury us for 35, 40 years. So we have to be careful. And what this, some of the changes in the policy that I like is that it recognizes a short-term window and a long-term window. And I think that's a good start to work that out. Is this perfect? No, but now we want to encourage you, would you please post it on the registry so we can go out and bring the comments in, and we can go continue on the process. I think we've got a good start here. There's a lot of good basic fundamentals, and there's some changes that I'd like to see, and I'm going to be sure to share them with you. But today, we're about as close as we can get at this stage of the game. Move forward, shoo them, keep the department moving, move forward, because we need to get beyond certain plateaus in the relationship with the communities that are in the stakeholders. Now we can get a discussion focused here. So I thank you for your time, and and encourage you to post this son of a gun on the state registry as quickly as you can. Thank you.
Thank you. Jerry Lowe? Okay, Mr. Barkhurst.
Thank you. Have not seen this before today, so cannot give detailed analysis. If we get a chance to review it publicly, we can do that. I see two chances to get lumps of coal here. One is I haven't heard any mention about, by my calculations, looking at the escapement goals for the three main rivers for Chinook. 40% of the spawning gravel is in the Nazel River. I heard no discussion of how do we allocate for the fact that if we pour 3 to 6 million smolts in there, then we've removed 40% of our spawning gravel in the drainage from wild fish production. There's an opportunity here, possibly, for the recreational fishermen to lose, if we understood you right, that recreational fishermen would have priority for Chinooks, priority in the north part of the bay. It looks like fish coming in and heading up the Nazel will bypass the northeast quadrant of the bay. That's where a lot of small boats fish and where the bank fishermen can fish now in the Willapa River. And so there's an opportunity here to lose 40% of the spawning gravel from production for wild Chinook and to lose half of the area for sports fishermen to fish in. Don't know if that's true. It's just what it looks like off the top of my head, and I hope you all will be alert to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Gray. Okay, Mr. Lowe.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Lowe. Madam Chairman, gentlemen. I think this is just more of the same old, same old. What we're doing here is we got a bunch of sportsmen that want the fish, and that's all that it boils down to. They want all of them. They've tried to pass initiatives and whatever to get them all. Now we're going through a bunch of mumbo jumbo, but what it all boils down to is give them to the sports. Willapa is a sickening example of that. These guys never seem to get enough, and as a commission, I can't believe that we have a Chinook priority for the sports. What's the point in doing that? The 015 run, which is out in the ocean, let's assume, the entire run, it belongs to the people of the state of Washington. Everybody. 98% of the people of the state of Washington don't even fish in the Willapa. Probably more than that. It's hard telling how many fish there, but very few. And yet you want to give them all a Chinook? We want to prioritize the needs of the sports fishermen? What are the needs of the sports fishermen? Let's identify the needs of the sports fishermen. How many Chinook does one man need? Is that an unfair question? Yesterday we talked a little bit about the license sales in the state of Washington. Well, I don't know what happened in the last year or two, but prior to that, the last 10 years, sales have been going down because we've got these hot dogs that travel all over the state fishing these sports fish. They can't eat them. They eat the bellies out of some of them. They sell them. They feed them their dogs. Is it an unfair question to limit the sports to a certain amount of Chinook? You pick a number. Those numbers that you talked about yesterday, all those guys up there at Vernada, yeah, they go right up the river. They brag. You're nobody if you don't get 100 salmon a day in the sports community in the state of Washington. I mean, 100 salmon a year, pardon me. And some of them get 100 Chinook a year. Here we go. The price of Chinook, the Chinook, the Willapa Chinook, at Pike's Market are about $20 a pound. The price kind of goes down a little bit. Last year's sprayers were $40 a pound. Use that for your multiplier. That's what the public pays for these fish, and yet the public don't even get to see them, especially if you prioritize the Willapa for Chinook for recreational people. Last year, after the fiasco that was in Grays Harbor, which I'm sure you're all well aware of, and I'm sure you're all well aware that if you don't follow the rules in the Willapa, they'll sue you. Is that the dinger? I got more, but I'll save it. Or I'll take it to the legislature like the other guys, because this is, and those are some of the questions we're going to ask.
Okay, thank you. Lance Gray, please come forward. Okay, Mr. Gray.
Madam Chairman and Commission members, I'm going to steal about 30 seconds just to say something. You don't normally hear this from me. I put a lot of time in on crab advisory boards, tri-state crab advisory boards, salmon advisory boards, and I will tell you we are going to miss Phil Anderson. I've sat in several meetings, very sharp, very quick. One of few people I've ever seen, as I think back to an advisory board in Oregon, it can talk and be thinking about two different things at the same time. Thank you, Phil, for all the time. Seriously. Okay, Steve Gray, commercial fisherman, one of the owners in Bellboy Crab Company. Got to go fast now. I don't have a lot of time. Fished in Willapa 45 years. Been on every advisory board forever, I think. So, anyway, you know, this is a really tough situation. You've listened to many of my cohorts, and you know what we feel. You've looked at the pictures of Willapa Bay. How do we find something that works? Sport fisheries fishing 7 days a week, all bodies of water, large limits, two poles. You heard that before. That's where they are. Miranda always tells me conflict. We got to try and eliminate conflict. How do we do that with something that's going to work? And yet, just like this gentleman a minute ago said, we fish for the people in the state. If 3,000 people fish sport fished in Willapa Bay, and you did the math at 7 million people, that's 4/10,000ths of 1% of this population in the state. You represent all the rest of it also. We do need to have a commercial fishery, but how do we make this work? You listen to Steve Theisfeld. hard to approach this. I guess if you have to separate the two fisheries, if that's what we're headed towards, obviously you use the south end of the bay because the sport fishery fishes in 2T. If you do that, I think Theisfeld pretty well represented what you'd have to do is increase the production to get it where you can get to the 25% of the harvest that the sport fishery is supposed to increase. I guess we'd have to live with that. I don't. We fish in the Columbia River. We live in Chinook. We own the cannery. Now we fish up at Washougal because that's where our fisheries moved to. We'll need a little time to try and talk this out, I think, through our industry, but I know the nacelle. We put a lot of time at the nacelle hatchery. We've redone bird fences, seines to seine the fish within in the river, in the hatchery for them, rebuilt the adult holding ponds. I can remember cutting 1,400 boards one day, and my other commercial guys, the signs, they put 17,000 screws in. We worked a lot at the nacelle hatchery. I don't want you to think that we don't, but and it's hard to figure out what to do with this thing. We catch 80% of our Chinook harvest before September 15th. So if you're going to have anything that's meaningful, I guess if you move to the south from Bay Center, and I'm old, I've fished for 45 years in the Willapa, I've never seen a sport boat fishing south of Bay Center, never. They all fish 2T in that area up there to the North River. I'd love to just go on for 20 minutes, but I know how it goes. I'm just going to say that the AHA plan tells you clearly that you need some time, probably the 21-year episode. You need to have both entities in a harvest position where they can harvest these fish. If you increase the numbers of fish, you pretty well have to work, I suppose, the commercial fishery from Bay Center south.
Thank you. Greg McMillan. Come forward, please. Okay, Mr. Gray.
Hello, Chair. My name is Lance Gray. I've been on the commercial advisory board for the Willapa Bay since the beginning of it. We started 8 years ago in many, many meetings. I look around this room and I see exactly the same people that are on that board and exactly the same people that come and participate in those meetings. I'm tired of going to meetings. I'm sure you guys are all tired of meetings, too. I hope we can get this thing done and move on with our lives. I also have fished in Willapa Bay for 25 years. as much as I don't want to support, I feel like we have to separate ourselves from the commercial and sport fleets so we don't have this constant. I don't think we're going to stop going to meetings, I guess, until we do, because it's going to be a constant battle with the same people that are sitting behind me. We've all had some nice arguments at all these meetings, but one of the things I have a complaint about is the way we came up with our mortality rates for our big mesh fishery. We did that on the assumption of several scientists that didn't use the studies from the Columbia River. I would like to see us go back, and I don't think anybody in our fishery is afraid of doing a study in the Willapa at getting an actual number instead of having another group impose that number upon us of from 40% to 65% on our mortality rates. So that's what I'd like to say for now. If you have any questions.
Thank you. Brian Kramer, please come forward. And Mr. McMillan.
Yeah, hello. My name is Greg McMillan. I'm a commercial gill netter, and I am in support of the primary shift from the nacelle to the Willapa, our alternative B. I would also like to see the mortality rates changed back to where they were, to the 40% range, which was an actual science study done in the Columbia, not assumptions of a sport advocacy group. I also would like to see an updated study done on the natural spawner goal numbers. I mean, we were told today that it was a 30-year-old study. I know I've changed a lot in 30 years, and I'm sure the rivers have too. Also, the alternative gear, I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Alternative gear is this. What we're using now is the beach seines, the fish traps. I just want to remind the commission that most of the South Bay, where these alternative fisheries would be done, is privately owned by oyster growers. You know, so you have, I'm an oysterman as well, so I'm in the bay quite a few days out of the year. And I just would like to remind that you have to have a place to do this. It's not just a magic wand that you can say, we can pull a beach seine or we can put a fish trap in. You know, these people own this land and or the ground that's going to be used on. So I would like that to be in consideration, too, as far as with all this alternative gear stuff. So thank you.
Thank you. Francis Estelita. Okay, Mr. Kramer.
So I'm Brian Kramer. I represent the recreational sector and serve on the ad hoc committee. I've got a lot of ground to cover, so I'll try to speak quickly. But I think there's a significant unappreciated cost with switching the primary from the nacelle to the Willapa. First, there's the loss of all this previous effort and sacrifice that's gone into conservation so far on the nacelle. I think there's obviously a zero-sum game for the recreational fishers on the Willapa and Nacelle River. Whoever gets the primary is going to have very limited access to hatchery fish in river. So if you look at the marine fishery, one of the unique features of Willapa Bay is that it has had a robust tidewater fishery for Chinook that is accessible by small boats. So that is the only place in the bay where there is essentially unlimited entry for the recreational fishermen. And that small boat fishery is highly dependent on Forks Creek hatchery production. Essentially, all the fish that those small boats catch are Willapa River-bound hatchery fish. So if you switch the primary, you're going to disenfranchise all those small boats. Everybody fishing from Tokeland east to South Bend is not going to have access. And you're going to move the productive fishing grounds out to the western part of the bay, west of Tokeland. So there are costs that have not been discussed with switching the primary, and I just want you guys to appreciate that. The second thing that I'd like to state is that in the transition plan, and we just got the policy, so I'm still trying to digest this, that really doesn't resemble a recreational priority. At least if you go to recreational fishermen and ask them, what's recreational priority look like? They will instantly tell you it looks like the management plan from 2000 to 2008. Which is when the nets went in September 15th. And this doesn't look anything like that. And then the third thing that I would suggest might be helpful is it's taken as an article of faith by much of the advisory board and a lot of the community that surplus hatchery fish is a wasted fish with no value. And I know that Tim Hamilton took a stab at trying to address that issue. I would ask you guys to maybe direct staff to do a cost-benefit analysis of surplus fish so that, you know, we could have something concrete to move forward with. I know there is a study out there. I was, you know, peripherally involved in that. And I suggest there is some value to those fish. So just discounting that, I think, is probably a mistake. But we need to have a real cost-benefit analysis of what the various options are for managing these hatchery fish. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Estalila?
For the record, my name is Francis Estalila. I also serve on the Willapa Advisory from the inception. I'd like to put on the record that I do agree with Mr. Bob Lake. This is a big task. It's full of challenges. And we need to be very cautious about rushing to cobble something together just in time for North of Falcon. You know, we're going to be releasing preseason forecasts for the North of Falcon process in another month, and those gears get going. There's still too many loose ends to tie up with this Willapa policy, and just so many unresolved issues. I think there's some risk involved in just trying to piecemeal something together in the rush to meet North of Falcon 2015. I think we do need more time. I'd like to make a couple comments about the primary population. In the presentation, which I missed most of, but I did look through the PowerPoint handout here, it still lists the alternatives of nacelle versus Willapa as the primary, yet the language in the draft policy has pretty much committed to using Willapa as the primary. It's a big decision. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I was one of the first proponents to suggest we ought to look at that because it might make management a little easier. But regardless, once we have chosen one, I'd like to make a pitch that the other drainage not just be turned into a giant meat market hatchery production. We're still looking out for conservation. I think whichever one we don't choose should still be considered and designated a contributing population along with the PNI and HSRG benchmarks that go along with that designation. And finally, I'd like to look at the 19% harvest rate that's specified in the current draft policy. Again, first time I've seen it. All the documentation and all the data that's been presented shows that you are highly unlikely to meet your conservation objective for anything over a 10% harvest rate. And the higher you go, the worse it looks. I mean, you saw three separate graphs there for the three conservation populations that are being considered. And if we harvest at anything more than 10% on a primary, we're not going to meet the conservation goal. And that's all I have to say for now. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That concludes the hearing. So Steve, would you come back up here? I think we've got to have some discussion now about what we've heard, any guidance the commission wants to provide, staff. Director Anderson, do you have anything to add at this point?
Well, maybe just a couple of things. You know, we embarked on the development of this plan and knew that there was a lot of work to be done. We're looking at potentially implementing a significant change in the way we manage Willapa Bay from a number of different perspectives. Been a lot of work done in terms of developing the model to help us make those decisions. And one of the things we talked about in December was we were, I think, collectively recognizing that the timeline for the process to try to get this done and approved in the February meeting so that we would have something completed for the use in the 2015 North of Falcon process was going to squeeze us to the point that we run the risk of not having a well thought out product, and also potentially limiting the kind of public interaction that I think is needed prior to a decision by this body. That has certainly played itself out since December. There's at least three guys here. When you were up at 3 a.m. thinking about the decision you made earlier today, they were literally up in the office getting this information put together for the presentation here this morning. That's not a recipe that I think is something we want to expect or replicate. But they were doing their level best to go through all the data. I think the COHO piece has taken a lot of work to go through all that data and get it in a format where the model can be run. Having that kind of a schedule and expectation of staff is just not realistic. It's not sustainable. And so I would like for us to think, as part of our discussion, think seriously about not trying to do too much between now and February. And that is to say, not to look for a final decision on a comprehensive policy that looks far into the future for a February, an expectation for an outcome in February. So that, I think there were concerns that the document that was produced and distributed today, that people had not seen that, and well, that's true, and that's in part due to the fact that it was still in being refined last night or this morning. Fair enough. You need time to review a document before you can be expected to offer some cogent comments on it, and we will get it up on the website and those kinds of things, presuming there's an acknowledgement and okay from the commission to do that so we can begin that public comment period on this particular draft. So that leaves open the question of, okay, well, if we're potentially not going to have something adopted that's a comprehensive document that's looking out and kind of playing off your comments, Chair Wecker, about the vision for Willapa Bay and making sure that we've built those elements into the plan. What do we do for 2015 in terms of Willapa policy? I'd like to give an opportunity as we're going through the time period between now and February, the February Commission meeting, for some thought about that. Okay. I mean, when I go through the draft policy, I can pick out probably 70% of the pieces that are in the policy that I would say are applicable, would be applicable to the 2015 process. Mm-hmm. The question is, what do you do with the piece that's between 2015 and 2017, and there's two different options in there? How do we, or do we, take that and try to put some sort of guidance that captures those parameters, those sideboards, as a commission guidance for the 2015 process without making those final decisions on either one of those options or some hybrid of those options that might ultimately be what's in the document. So, again, I'd like to have a little bit of opportunity for us to think about what a policy, an interim 2015 policy might look like that we could then reference in our North of Falcon policy that you discussed yesterday. so that there is a level of guidance, but at the same time, there's some, I guess I'll use the term flexibility or sideboards within which you would expect us to do our work in terms of putting the 2015 plan together. So those are just some thoughts in terms of where I think we are, kind of some thoughts about my recommendations about how we might move forward and do this in a way that's giving us enough time, making sure that we've got the information in front of us to make a well-informed decision.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't sense very much urgency on the part of the commission to get a final decision made. Another consideration that we've talked about is that our March meeting is in Moses Lake, and it will be primarily focused on the hunting rules and the hearings having to do with hunting rules. So that's not going to be the ideal place to make a decision on important salmon management policy. We will be back in Olympia in April. So April's potential. And then there's another meeting in June. So, but I like that thinking. I've felt that this is so complicated with Coho, Chinook affecting each other and the different views of the sport stakeholders as well as the commercial stakeholders. So I think we do need more time. Does everyone agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the sense is we want you to take the time you need to come up with a very good plan, very good policy. And then we ask that you inform us how we can help give guidance for North of Falcon this year. Are there specific topics the commission would like to bring up now for further investigation by staff? Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any suggestions. I just felt it appropriate to thank the gentleman that's worked till almost daylight. I know not just last night, but in prior evenings as well. That's borders on above and beyond, and I just want to thank him for that. It's appreciated.
Commissioner Kenney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does the current document, does that need to go out, though, so that people can have a chance to look at that? Put on the website as was asked.
I think that's, I'm going to look to Jim, Ron, and Steve. I think that's what we would be recommending, is that this version of our document get put out for public review, get it out on our website. And if I may, Madam Chair, ask Steve if he has anything, his thoughts about that.
No, that's exactly what we were thinking, Director Anderson, unless there was any minor tweaking that that we were directed here today to take care of.
Okay. Other items? I think the Fish Committee will continue to go into depth with the staff regarding further developments, and we will be hearing each meeting. Maybe not in Moses Lake, but there'll be several more opportunities to engage the full commission. Okay. So is there any objection to this draft policy being put out to the public? No objection. Go forward. Any topics for further investigation? Haven't heard any, so I think we have reached the end of this agenda item. Thanks again. I know you're working very hard. There was no draft policy locked away, gathering dust. It was hot off the press. So that's why no one had seen it. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.